It is Free Talk Live, where you're invited to take control of the airwaves, talk about whatever is on your mind. 603-283-6160, that's the number if you want to weigh in. Again, 603-283-6160. With you in the studio tonight, it's Aria.
It's Ian.
And Bonnie.
And coming up, we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff that we didn't actually get into yesterday, like the Department of Justice looking into having a domestic terrorism task force or something. I don't even remember the specifics now, but they're doing something like 2,700 investigations throughout the United States. Meanwhile, one of the military organizations, I don't even remember which one, probably multiple of them, are doing drills in, I think, North Carolina. I have to find all of those stories again because I had them up yesterday and don't have them now. But all kinds of weird things happening. They're testing out war games against, quote, freedom fighters.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep, man, that's right. I don't even know what's in the news today. I literally just woke up from a nap after we've been up since 6:30 this morning.
That's right. You had the decriminalization of psilocybin hearing this morning, right?
We did, yeah, where New Hampshire, if this were to pass, would be the first state to pass psilocybin decriminalization through the legislative process. So Oregon has it for therapeutic. And, of course, they also decriminalized all drugs there.
Through the ballot initiative.
So it's not been done yet through actually having the legislature pass something.
So how did the hearing go?
Well, Bonnie, it was your first hearing. What was your assessment of the criminal justice committee that we sat in front of?
They asked a lot of questions, and I didn't feel like they were asking questions just to be obtuse or say this could never happen. At least only one of them was being that way, and he only spoke up one time. I feel like he maybe even felt outnumbered or something.
Was this one of the state reps or just someone who was there?
Oh, yes,
was
the state reps.
Was this that annoying old dude?
Yes.
Of course it was.
Only the state reps can ask questions during public testimony.
Okay.
So for listeners that aren't familiar, in New Hampshire, every bill gets a public hearing. There's 800-plus pieces of legislation every year. There's, I think, 20-something, what they call committees. Each committee's got around 20 or so people on it, and they have to hear every single piece of legislation. So no matter how obscure, only if there's only one sponsor for the legislation, and this one had multiple sponsors. This is a bipartisan piece of legislation with both Republicans and Democrats behind it. And, you know, I think it seems more obvious that they're on the wrong side of history if they don't support this thing. I mean, just because we didn't have an overwhelming room packed full of people like you would on a marijuana bill. So it definitely hasn't gotten, you know, the level of just general kind of support that you would expect from, say, a marijuana decrim or a marijuana legalization bill would. When it does essentially the same thing as the marijuana decrim did back in 2017, which is to say it would make up to a certain amount of mushrooms, in this case 12 grams, I believe is the number, essentially a non-criminal act where if you got caught with it, they could take it and issue you $100 fine. But if you look at the statistics of what the police, I just checked Keene. I didn't look at any other police department. We live in Keene, New Hampshire. I just checked Keene. I asked them for the 2 years of statistics of marijuana arrests prior to marijuana decriminalization. So for 2015 and 2016, the full, you know, the 2 full years. And I asked for the 2 full years after, so 2018 and 2019. And I just wanted to know, what do the numbers look like? How many people were I asked specifically for ticketing or arrests after the fact because you couldn't ticket prior to that.
And you can't arrest after the fact, right?
Only if it's like your third. If it's your fourth violation within 3 years, then they can arrest you in that case. Or if it's over the amount, right? So if it was a felony level amount or a misdemeanor amount, there's like 3/4 of an ounce. If you're above that, then they can arrest you.
Okay.
It literally went from like 76 arrests per year down to 2.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's impressive.
Yeah. So they're basically not, and those were probably, I didn't know what kind of arrests those were, but those were probably dealing related thing. So it basically went to nothing.
I can't imagine there are too many psilocybin arrests in
far fewer, I would guess. Yeah.
And the cop that gave a testimony today, obviously
the one cop
in opposition of the bill to decriminalize.
But only one of them. Like, you know, there could have been a whole phalanx of police there, and it was just one dude from the drug task force at the state police.
Yeah, but he had to admit that they don't arrest people that often for this anyway.
Yeah, and he basically trotted out the, oh my God, more people are going to use it, and danger!
Our kids objections. Are going to use it. He said, my kids have already reported to me that there's already psilocybin mushrooms in the schools, which is very disturbing to me. I was like, snitches.
Which admits the failure of drug prohibition, right?
You've got
drugs really good are in the point. Schools, right?
That was what the state rep responded, I think, when you emailed him, Bonnie, said something like, well, propose to me how we're going to keep kids from doing this.
And no, he said, propose to me how we're going to keep kids from smoking marijuana, which makes no
completely
sense.
Completely off-topic. Right. Off-topic. Has nothing to do with anything.
But even the same argument, like, convince me how we're going to keep kids from doing this. I don't have to keep your kids from doing this.
It's your
if
job,
you don't want
Dad.
Your kids doing it, yeah, that is your job.
And unfortunately, he didn't ask that today. If he would have asked me that today, that's exactly what I would have said. I would have said, do your kids drink alcohol? I mean, I don't have kids, but if I had kids, they wouldn't be drinking alcohol, and it's legal. I don't know.
And
you know,
speaking of alcohol,
it's your responsibility.
I did bring that up in my testimony where I pointed out that Professor David Nutt, who is essentially the former drug czar of the UK, came out a decade ago after he was canned from his job. He came out in favor of ending the war on drugs. Which was interesting. Wish he would have done it while he was.
Why
on the
did
job.
He get fired? Because I read that today. Too.
I don't remember that. That's a good question.
Okay.
But
he was the one who ranked the danger
correct.
To the individual and the danger to society of all manner of different substances, from alcohol to shrooms to
right. And alcohol
marijuana.
Was almost. I think actually there was. I think at the top of that list it was alcohol and then heroin, and then like cannabis was like in the middle of the list, and at the bottom of the list, the very bottom, was mushrooms. And so I pointed that out, that this is considered less dangerous to society and the individual than even cannabis, which you guys already decriminalized. So it's safer. It's therapeutic. The guy who brought up the bill, the representative who sponsored the bill, the one who created it, he told the committee he was going to give them all the studies. So they got a lot to look at, right? That there's
nice.
A lot of information coming in. So I just reiterated, there's a lot of studies. The studies are growing. They're doing them on larger numbers of people. The FDA has approved these things. So it's safe. It's therapeutic. And it's already, basically, I said, you guys just need to catch up with the New Hampshire Supreme Court, because there was an incredibly important court case that happened a year ago in December of 2020.
This was the one about using psychedelics for religious purposes, if
correct.
I remember correctly.
Yeah. So I said, you guys just need to catch up with the Supreme Court at this point, because, I mean, as long as it's for spiritual or for religious purposes, it's legal to use psychedelic mushrooms in New Hampshire, according to a 4-0 decision, a unanimous decision by the New Hampshire Supreme Court. I mean, you want a reliable court decision, no dissenters. These people said, not only does New Hampshire protect your right to religion, as far as the Constitution of New Hampshire, you know, we got that, just like the U.S. Constitution does. But
New Hampshire's is a little stronger than the U.S. Constitution.
And the reason why it's stronger is because New Hampshire's Constitution protects, and that's what backed up this decision, it protects your right to worship in the way that you choose, which is much stronger language and very clear. Oh, yeah. So the U.S. Constitution, oh, yeah, you can have whatever religion you want. But the Constitution
but can you
of New
practice
Hampshire,
that
right,
religion?
Right. The Constitution of New Hampshire says you can practice it as long as you don't disturb other people's peace.
And the state rep I don't know which state rep, I can't remember. A state rep asked Ian, after he made that point about the New Hampshire Constitution, he asked Ian, well, what about people who want to use it for non-religious purposes?
This was the same state rep, by the way, about that.
It was?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
Define non-religious purpose.
You know,
exactly.
To a party, some
why
kid.
Is that
so why is that
religious
experience? Some people believe that the entire universe is,
true.
You know, God.
I guess if you're taking it for the religious purpose at a party, then...
Well, maybe the kid didn't realize that he was about to have a religious experiment.
That's true.
Right? He's like,
yeah.
I'm just going to go to this party and eat some shrooms. Next thing you know, he's meeting God face to face or whatever.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this bill passing? You think it's got good chances?
I'm optimistic. I mean, the people in that hearing, wasn't just me and Bonnie. There were a few other people who spoke. It wasn't overwhelming numbers, but... The only guy who was against it was the cop.
Makes me proud to be in New Hampshire. Coming up, we're going to talk about Jack Dorsey and his crypto defense fund, 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, where your calls and thoughts are welcome. 603-283-6160 if you'd like to share your opinions. That's 603-283-6160. Coming up, we're going to be talking about Bitcoin. Bitcoin Islands, Jack Dorsey setting up a crypto defense fund. I believe you have that story, Bonnie. And if you don't know what I'm talking about when I say Bitcoin, head on over to Bitcoin.com. Click Getting Started at the top of the page. Take a few minutes out of your day to learn about this important world-changing information. But if you do already know about it, you can find all of the news and headlines that are relevant to you at news.bitcoin.com. That's their news site. That's bitcoin.com.
There was actually some interesting Bitcoin bills today.
I had heard that, but I was skeptical because I was like, I feel like I would have known about that. But
well,
they were
not
sponsored by Keith Ammon, which is a pretty good Liberty guy.
He's a free stater.
So what were the crypto bills?
Well, I actually ran into Keith in the hallway, because that's a thing that you can do in New Hampshire. Is you just, you know, if you go to the state house, you talk to reps. I mean, unless you really don't want to. Like, you have to try to avoid them, essentially, if you don't want to talk to a state rep.
Well, that's where they work.
Yeah, they're everywhere, and they're approachable. If you want to talk to one of them, you can just walk up and introduce yourself if they don't already know you. If they already know you, they're probably going to walk up and say hello. So we ran into Mike Sylvia, the founder, the creator of the New Hampshire Independence legislation. He was there.
Nice.
He was actually introducing multiple pieces of legislation to reform civil asset forfeiture today. So there were some really good bills that were being heard, but the ones that Keith put in, and actually Bonnie and I disagree on these bills. But he was putting in legislation to, as he put it, catch us up with Wyoming. And in Wyoming, back in 2018, they passed a whole package of different pro-crypto legislation, basically. And one of the things that they allowed in Wyoming was crypto companies to essentially become banks. They have a certain wording for it. Like, there's a different term. They call it like a special depository institution. And it is essentially a crypto-approved bank, and that's the legislation. They basically took, you know, carbon copied the legislation from Wyoming.
Oh, nice.
And they put it in here in New Hampshire. He says he's not sure that all of them are going to pass, but another one he described makes
sure. That sounds like it would be beneficial for the, I mean, considering that New Hampshire is a strong cryptocurrency community already.
Yeah.
That would make it only stronger.
Well, the idea is to attract cryptocurrency businesses here. And what he explained was, as much as we libertarians don't want to see more laws created, unfortunately, corporations want that. They want to have a legal structure that says, it's okay, you can do this here. And
but
so
do we want the corporations?
Yeah, I just said...
Well, they hire people.
I didn't say I'm against this. I just said that just creeps me out to think of putting laws on the books for crypto. What does the government have any business regulating crypto at all?
I'm with you on that. I don't think that they should. I don't want to see more laws created as a general rule. However, I understand the reasoning for it. Here's another example. One of the three bills that he put in today.
He's a busy dude.
Yeah, well, they've got a bunch of them. One of them was to exempt digital assets or cryptocurrency from securities laws in New Hampshire. Now, they can't exempt...
I thought they already were.
If they were, then I don't think there'd be a need for this bill. But
okay,
this basically makes it clear. Like, cryptocurrency assets are not securities in the state of New Hampshire if this bill goes through. That wouldn't change the federal level, obviously.
Not unless New Hampshire also secedes.
Right. But at least it makes a statement that this is what New Hampshire's government thinks. And the other one essentially treats digital currencies as property. It makes it clear that these things are property instead of some other kind of legal category. So that's So that's my understanding of the three bills that were heard. It was in the afternoon, so we didn't actually attend those hearings. We headed home after about 1 o'clock. But hopefully,
I'd be very
well.
Interested in seeing how these bills do. What happens after a bill is heard like this? What does the committee do?
Good question. From my experience in the state house, there's usually some delay between when the hearing happens and when the committee actually votes on the thing.
Okay.
So basically,
that's
they do
unfortunate.
Them. Well, not really. The reason why is they need time to think about it, really. I mean, unless you presume they've all made their mind up already and they don't care about what people say in the hearing, which I'm sure is true of some of them, but a lot of them, I think, honestly, are open-minded and willing to listen, in my experience. They ask good questions. You know, people who are asking questions are at least interested, right? They're interested in learning
and they're
something.
Paying attention. They're not pretending to listen.
Correct. So usually what happens is they have the public hearings on a set of bills, like on a day like today, and then they set a date for the day when they will have what's called the executive session on those bills. And at the executive session, they'll have whatever back and forth discussion between the reps. So at the executive session, you don't get to speak publicly, but you can still come and attend it. So okay. the public hearings, when they get the input from anybody who shows up, and then the executive session is where they discuss it, talk about potential amendments, vote on potential amendments, and vote whether or not to recommend the bill pass or recommend the bill be killed or called inexpedient to legislate. So that's going to happen probably at a later time, maybe next week, maybe a couple weeks from now. So I'm not sure when.
So if they call for the bill to pass, does that increase its chances of actually passing the whole state house? Or?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
What they will do generally is they'll put a bunch of bills onto what they call the consent calendar, as I understand it. And that way the House can vote on these, all of the bills all at once. Like they just put a bunch of bills that should pass on what they call the consent calendar. I think they put bills that shouldn't pass on there as well. And then they vote all in one fell swoop and they just take care of, you know, 50 bills at one time or something like that, based on what the committees say. Any state rep, however, can speak up and say, I want that bill pulled off the consent calendar and have its own House floor discussion. So that's something that we want to see happen with the New Hampshire Independence Bill. If they try to put it on a consent calendar, whether they're recommending to kill it or whatever, especially if they're rep. Maybe it only is if they're recommending to kill it. That I'm not sure of. I don't know if the consent calendar is only for killing bills or for both. So I'm not I'm not the best expert on answering these questions. But
so I suppose the idea is that the committee are full of the people who know this particular subject best, and if they say,
"Well,
hey, this is,
in theory,
yeah, right." Obviously,
a lot of
none
times
of these people
really ignorant.
I didn't understand why they were assigned to specific committees. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if it's. I don't know if it's something. I think that if they have the political sway, they can tell the person who's in charge of that, whoever. It's usually the committee is. Sorry, the committees are assigned by the Speaker of the House. So whichever party is running things, whoever's in the majority. So right now it's the Republicans. So the Republicans get to make the assignments to the committees.
But it
can't
be
political to some extent.
I can't believe that it would be based off who is the most qualified to be in each committee.
No, it's political.
We were in the criminal justice one today, and they all had very easy to answer questions for the cops. Do you get to keep the civil asset forfeiture money? So they're obviously, you
things
know,
they
not,
should have known.
Yeah,
right?
They would have known that if they were experts.
Yeah.
So what was the answer to that? Did the police departments get to keep it as it is?
Yes, 45% of it. And the other 45% goes to the other police, which is the Attorney General's office.
Well, hopefully that changes as a result of these bills. I think you said Mike Sylvia introduced that.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, multiple civil asset forfeiture bills today.
Doing great work up there. 603-283-6160 if you want to join us. Well, you know what you think about decriminalizing psilocybin cubensis or rolling back civil asset forfeiture. We're going to talk about Jack Dorsey and his crypto defense fund. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live.
Do you feel like your country no longer holds your values? Have you dreamt of a place where liberty-minded people can come together and leave government overreach behind? There are many people just like you that are discovering FreePrivateCities.com. They start at FreePrivateCities.com and connect via the social media links shown there. All skills will be needed when the first of the Free Private Cities open. It's sooner than you think. Stop arguing and build FreePrivateCities.com. FreePrivateCities.com.
Free Talk Live, where you're invited to weigh in with your thoughts and opinions. 603-283-6160 if you'd like to do that. That's 603-283-6160. With you tonight is Aria, Bonnie, and Ian. And Bonnie, you have the story about Jack Dorsey trying to set up a crypto defense fund. Now, Jack Dorsey was the CEO of Twitter. I think he stepped down.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, very recently.
And he's, I think he's a Bitcoin maximalist, if I remember correctly, but he's
I think so.
He's it at seems least, like it.
He promotes Bitcoin.
He does.
Yeah. And Litecoin, though. So.
And he runs the Square Corporation still. He's still the CEO over at Square, which is a payments company, kind of like PayPal.
They made Cash App.
Correct. And Cash App added Bitcoin purchasing, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that. So it did a lot to expose new people to Bitcoin who'd never had easy access to it before. And
Cash App did it well.
Them. Yeah, they did.
Where they will actually allow you to buy Bitcoin and then transfer it off of your Cash App.
You have to go through know your customer wallet. Process for that, but that's sure. to be expected from a centralized corporation.
But they didn't take the PayPal approach, which is, well, is this even Bitcoin? Because you don't have a way to prove it is or isn't, and you can't do anything with it.
Right, you can. So, PayPal's keeping it in their system and not letting you remove it from their system. So
yeah, and
no
at
idea.
The moment you can't even use it to buy from other PayPal sellers. If I remember
I think
correctly,
you can. I think you can do that, but you can't. The seller cannot take the Bitcoin out of their account.
Yeah, all they can do is sell it back to PayPal. So there's literally no evidence that there's any Bitcoin in PayPal.
And they don't have any plans for changing that or anything.
I think they said, you know, it's something they're looking into, mm-hmm. but they haven't said, yes, we're going to add this by the end of the year or anything like that. Mm. So I wouldn't expect them to change it.
Yeah, he's a Lightning advocate, Jack Dorsey, from
Bitcoin
what I understand.
Maximalist,
he's a maximalist. Yeah, Bitcoin Lightning, for listeners that don't know, is this super complex system that the Bitcoin programmers are building on top of Bitcoin to try to make it more scalable. But ultimately, all it does is really centralizes Bitcoin, and that's a bad thing. For those of us that understand...
It also confuses people.
Oh, yeah. But for those that understand the sort of the nature of what Bitcoin was supposed to be, which is decentralized, adding centralization to that system is a bit of a turnoff. So I'm not a fan of the Lightning Network. And that's just me from having heard about it. Honestly, I've never actually tried it.
And luckily, there's just so many other options. You don't have to... choose, oh no, they're making Bitcoin centralized. You can just use Bitcoin Cash.
Or Dash. Or many others. Monero.
I've used the Lightning Network, and it's a thing. It does what Lightning Network advocates say it's going to do.
Does it? Because I've heard it fails a lot.
I never had it fail, but it was tremendously
unwieldy. What was the amount you sent?
Oh, it was something negligible, like 0.01 Bitcoin, which at the time would have been, I don't know, $30 or $40.
The smaller the amount, the more likely it is to succeed, as of the statistics I've heard about.
The more likely it is to succeed as
yes.
it gets smaller?
That's correct. Scary.
That's bizarre.
So it's more likely to fail as it gets larger.
I also had to permanently, or at least semi-permanently, lock in some amount of Bitcoin as collateral in order
That's
to...
That's the part that really
it
is a turn-off. It
got so confusing.
Yeah.
Why
Absolutely
they,
useless.
I just don't understand why they would want to make it more confusing.
Because they don't think it's confusing. To them, it's this thing that solves the problems that Bitcoin has, and they don't even understand at this point because they've been doing it for so long. Or, more likely, they've never actually used it to try to make a payment anywhere.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. These are computer geeks who cannot relate to the average person.
And they don't spend their crypto anyway.
Well, there's that. But the average person getting into Bitcoin is already a confusing process. It's already,
sure.
You got to learn some new stuff. And some people, they're not so good at learning new things, especially when it comes to technology.
No, I think the average person can wrap their minds around the Exodus wallet or the Edge wallet or Konami or whatever. But when they have to move that to this other thing and establish a connection to this node, but that node can't communicate with this node. That's way beyond the capabilities of the average person.
Yeah.
I remember when Ian was in jail, for some reason I just wanted to learn about it because I heard about it and I was wondering, my friends complain about, I always hear nobody complaining about Bitcoin being not scalable and slow and expensive. Don't any of my friends ever talk about the Lightning Network? So I was like, I'm going to learn about it. I have nothing else to do because my boyfriend's in jail. And it was just so complicated, I just gave up.
Yeah, it's not user-friendly.
The only guy who ever talks about it is Chris Reitman. He is co-founder of the Bitcoin Embassy here in town.
I think he gave up talking about it. He never talks about it.
He couldn't convince anyone.
He got me to use the Lightning Network. I don't remember... I don't even remember now what website it was, but you could...
The pizza site, right?
Yeah, you could buy pizza with Bitcoin by using the Lightning Network. I was like, all right, cool. I'll check it out. But it was so limited
in what it could offer you. Like, barely customizable. Yeah.
It was like you had to get this one specific deal. You couldn't tip more than this amount, and you could only get two toppings for a pizza. And it was like,
what?
Or you can just
now,
go.
That's not the Lightning Network's fault. That's just whoever programmed that website. Yes. It was a proof of concept at that time.
It was a pizza store in Keene?
Yeah.
That was using the Lightning
Domino's
Network?
Actually.
Oh, wow, that's crazy.
Well, but it was a front end.
Yeah, it was an interface that someone made that would place the order for you using the Domino's website. So it wasn't like Domino's was accepting Lightning Network.
Yeah, you were
like
paying them, and then they were paying Domino's and, you know,
and then it
card.
Turned out that the mechanism behind it was just them using gift cards in order to complete the payment at Domino's, which...
Sure.
Okay, but at that point, why wouldn't I just go to giftcard.bitcoin.com and get my own gift card?
Yeah, well, the point was to use the Lightning Network. That
yes.
was the point of it.
But there were,
make it more complicated.
Yeah, add steps
to this
process.
There were easier ways I could have done this, more effective ways where I could have actually gotten what I wanted and handled the actual transaction myself.
Isn't it Dash that also has where you can buy gift cards with Dash?
Yeah, and I really wish I could try it out.
Yeah, because they're doing like... some sort of, you get discounts or something for buying the gift cards.
Yeah.
I just always forget about it.
I am, you know, as you are, Aria, prohibited under some ridiculous bail conditions in the Crypto 6 case where the government raided our studio last year, prohibited from using crypto. So I cannot install the Dash Direct app on my smartphone and actually use it. Where they essentially have created some sort of a front end to make it easy to purchase gift cards with the Dash cryptocurrency. And you do it at the point of sale. And I was listening to Free State Live, which is the Monday night show, competes with us, that some of the Free Staters are doing here in New Hampshire.
They
now.
Really call themselves Free State Live?
Yeah. It actually came to me.
They said it as a joke at first, and then they tagged Ian. Right?
No, they didn't say it on there first. They actually
not on air. They joked about it on Twitter.
Oh, I didn't know that. What I knew was they came to me and asked me, hey, is it cool if we use the name Free State Live? And I said, yeah, of course. Totally cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do it.
Yeah. And so they did that.
No, we're going to sue you for violating our intellectual property.
I mean, it was nice of them to do that, but they didn't have to. They had Joel Valenzuela on the show this week, and he's always an interesting interview because he lives his life on crypto. He has not touched a dollar in... I don't know, 5 years or
where
something
does he
like
live?
That. He lives on the seacoast. Hmm. Sadly, he should have moved to Keene, but he lives in the second best area for crypto spending.
That's fair.
And so he's a big Dash advocate. He does some work for Dash, so he gets paid in Dash. So he loves to spend it. And the Dash Direct app sounds very, very interesting because it lets you choose from mega companies, right? Like big corporations. I forget what the listing includes, but it's. Companies you've heard of,
sure.
And then you at the register, they give you the total that they want to get from you. You type that into the app, and then you pay the invoice with Dash, and you've got a gift card. He makes it sound very, very smooth. I, again, haven't tried it, don't know for sure what it's like, but it's an interesting theory. And they're coming out with some sort of a KYC, or without KYC free, meaning without KYC debit card, and I don't know how that's going to work.
That'll be interesting.
It sounds too good to be true.
Which means it could be too good to be true. But Dash is doing interesting things, and I'm with you. I wish I could experiment and play with these things.
Yeah.
Most of my cryptocurrency usage for places like Walmart, stuff like that, was just buying gift cards, usually from, I think, Bitcoin.com was one of them, and there was another one that I used frequently.
Oh, and the key is the Dash Direct actually gives you a discount. So are you getting a gift card, paying with the gift card sort of through the back end of this Dash Direct app, but you might save 3% or 4% or something like that.
I wish I could play with it because it sounds fun. 603-283-6160 if you'd like to weigh in. Have you ever bought a gift card with cryptocurrency or used the Lightning Network? Let us know. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, where you're invited to take control of the airwaves and talk about whatever is important to you. 603-283-6160 if you'd like to weigh in. Again, the number is 603-283-6160. Bonnie, you have a story about Jack Dorsey. That's the former CEO of Twitter and current CEO of Square. What exactly is he doing?
What is he doing?
Well, CoinTelegraph says that Jack Dorsey announces a Bitcoin legal defense fund, and the fund will help to provide a defense for Bitcoin developers and will include a team of volunteers and part-time lawyers. So maybe not people who are currently getting indicted by the federal government for Bitcoin-related
quote-unquote
crimes. And
this is only Bitcoin-related, so like he wouldn't help out Jeremy Kaufman, who is the CEO of Library?
I don't know. Sometimes I forget that the word Bitcoin doesn't mean crypto, so I kind of read that and my brain translated it to crypto, so now I'm realizing it does say Bitcoin developers. So
yeah,
maybe
it depends who you're talking to. I mean, to some people, Bitcoin is the Kleenex of cryptocurrency, meaning that people will sort of use the term Bitcoin when they're talking about a variety of different cryptocurrencies, sort of like in the South, you might say Coke, but you mean something else.
I haven't encountered that yet with cryptocurrency. I haven't had anyone to say, hey, I want some Bitcoin and then it or whatever. And then it turns out they actually wanted, you know, Dash or something.
That's true. But some people will say Bitcoin and they'll mean Bitcoin Cash or Bitcoin SV or something like that.
Or they'll say, like, are you into Bitcoin? But they really mean all crypto.
Yeah.
But I don't think people say, I want some Bitcoin. No, Monero Bitcoin. Yeah. But
will
anyways,
one day, I'm sure.
I bet that that's true. But I think in this case, I think he really is just talking about Bitcoin because it goes on to say, former Twitter CEO and Block founder Jack Dorsey has announced plans to create a Bitcoin legal defense fund with Chaincode Labs co-founder Alex Morcos and Martin White, who appears to be an academic from the University of Sussex. The announcement was sent on a mailing list for Bitcoin developers, Bitcoin-dev at blah, 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 Wednesday morning from an email.
Are Bitcoin developers, is there any history of them ever being in legal trouble?
In this situation, I don't really know.
And are they only going to be protected in regards to Bitcoin-related lawsuits, or are they just going to be protected in general because they're Bitcoin? So if somebody sues them for, I don't know, they've slipped and fell on a patch of ice at their house, are they going to? I mean, obviously, this isn't going to come into play, or I would think it wouldn't come into play there. But yeah, I agree with you, Aria. What is the use case here?
Well, okay, it says here that there are people who are currently the subject of multi-front litigation. It says the announcement stated the fund will help provide a legal defense fund for Bitcoin developers who are currently the subject of multi-front litigation.
I had never heard of this.
But it doesn't give examples of who that might be.
Litigation and continued threats are having their intended effect. Individual defendants have chosen to capitulate in the absence of legal support, the email stated, referencing open source developers who are often independent and therefore susceptible to legal pressure. Quote, we propose a coordinated and formalized response to help defend developers.
Okay.
That sounds good. The only example of this I'm finding is going to be stuff related to Craig Wright,
who's suing a bunch of people in a bunch of different courts.
I mean, he's probably the main threat to this.
Maybe that's what this is all about. Maybe this is, without saying it, targeted at defending people who have been attacked by Craig Wright, who can't afford it. Because your average Bitcoin developer might have been late to the game. They don't have a large wallet of Bitcoin from which to pay very expensive attorney bills. So this, you know, it could be a killer if they get targeted by one of these frivolous lawsuits.
Yeah, and Craig Wright, he has plenty of money. If nothing else, he has plenty of money to throw at people in the court system.
And he is litigious and likes to do that stuff.
Correct.
The announcement went on to describe the Bitcoin Legal Defense Fund as a nonprofit entity that aims to minimize legal headaches and discourage software developers from actively developing Bitcoin and related projects.
So it does sound like he's willing to include related projects, at least, which doesn't just mean Bitcoin developers.
Okay.
Yeah. It could also mean Bitcoin Cash developers. I doubt it.
I suspect they'll be judicious about who they dole this out to, but it seems still like a positive development.
I think it is just Bitcoin, actually. I mean, I don't know why it says and related projects, because here it says, the main purpose of this fund is to defend developers from lawsuits regarding their activities in the Bitcoin ecosystem, including finding and retaining defense counsel, developing litigation strategy, and paying legal bills.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's still a step in a good direction.
Sure.
It's unfortunate that it's only helping Bitcoin people, but it's still a good thing. I think anyone who's working on Monero probably has a higher need of a legal system or a legal defense fund than the people working on Bitcoin.
Mm. I don't think anyone working on Monero, with the exception of Fluffy Pony, who was the head of development for a time, or at least their biggest spokesperson, he was targeted by, I think it was the FBI, maybe it was Interpol. Somebody came after him and brought him up on criminal charges for some BS in when he was traveling in Africa. But with the exception of him, there hasn't been any real targeting of Monero because no one knows who their developers are.
Oh, nice. Even the developers are anonymous. That's good news.
Yeah.
Okay. Good for them.
I don't know. I generally support this. I don't know what else there really is to say about why, unless they give us some specific cases.
Oh, I found one. That's what I was looking for in here. According to the email, the fund's first project will be to take over the existing defense of Ramona Ng's Tulip trading lawsuit against developers for alleged misconduct over access to a Bitcoin fortune. So Ramona Ng, A-N-G.
I've never heard of it. What? Something about tulips, you said?
It's in quotes. It's the nickname for the lawsuit is the Tulip Trading Lawsuit.
Interesting. I've certainly never heard of that, but that's not all surprising. There's a lot happening in the cryptocurrency world and in the Bitcoin world.
Okay. Ramona Ng is the wife of...
Craig Wright.
Dr. Craig Wright. According to CoinGeek, which is, by the way, a pro
with
Craig
the ex-wife?
Wright, it just says the wife. I don't know if she's an ex by now.
Because remember, her and the ex-wife were working on something. It almost sounded like they were suing Craig Wright. And I was like, wait, the ex-wife and the current wife are suing Craig Wright? How is that possible? Remember, yeah. That's when we talked about her before.
Story here is from November of 2020, so it's certainly possible that she has become the ex-wife of Craig Wright in the last year. I don't know. But at the time when this was written, and this is just, for the record, this is coming from a website that is all about Craig Wright. This is a pro-Craig Wright propaganda site. It's called CoinGeek.com. All they ever write about is Bitcoin SV and Craig Wright, which is Craig Wright's pet Bitcoin project.
I did not know that about them.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever even been to CoinGeek.com, so that's not terribly surprising.
They say the High Court in the UK has found in favor of Ramona Ng, who's the wife of Craig Wright, in her case against Reliant Co. Investments Limited, the Cyprus-based owner of a trading platform called UFX. She was a customer of the exchange and had great success trading on it, turning an investment of $200,000 into about $700,000, at which point the company blocked her account, initially without providing clarity as to why her account was blocked. She tried a number of arguments in order to justify its decision to ban the account and effectively seize hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of money from it. Reliant Co.'s argument was that Ong's account was actually being operated by Dr. Wright in contravention of their terms of service. They'd also argued that she had deliberately submitted incorrect information as part of their KYC process. But does that mean they get to keep your money? Like if you...
I would assume not.
Finally, they argued that the account was ultimately closed because the company had discovered that Ong was married to Dr. Wright, which they then claim is the inventor of Bitcoin, because again, it's a pro-right website.
Right.
Propaganda.
There's no evidence that he was actually the inventor of Bitcoin.
So,
and that the gains she had made were indicative of insider trading. Wow, those are pretty ridiculous. And the court did reject all three arguments, saying that Ong is entitled to the money and also unrealized gains from that time. So maybe there's another case that this woman is involved with now, because it wouldn't surprise me.
Well, Bonnie said it was called the Tulip Trading Case. I've never heard of it.
There's a link here.
They didn't mention tulips in here, that's for sure.
They didn't. I've actually got something here from April of last year.
Okay.
So Tulip Trust trustee Ramona Ng has sued Ira Kleiman.
This is the case we've discussed.
I thought that was Craig Wright suing Kleiman.
It is. I think it's the rights in general.
They just like suing people.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really seem... I mean, they're delusional, and they have evidently almost infinite amounts of money to throw at this.
Yeah.
Because they were ordered to pay some huge amount of money recently.
Mm.
And instead of being humbled by that, Craig Wright walks away going, yes, this was a victory. So they're litigious. They have too much money. And you know what they say? A fool and their money will soon be parted. He's doing everything he can to burn his money.
Well, good for Jack Dorsey for coming up with some legal money for these folks who are getting targeted by frivolous lawsuits.
603-283-6160 if you'd like to weigh in. What do you think about Craig Wright? He's obviously not Satoshi, but why is he so litigious? It's Free Talk Live.
Is your broken heart stopping you from being authentically happy? My name is Jeremy West, and for a limited time, I am running a free online class to teach you what most people don't know about how to deal with your feelings, the simple way to deal with your negative thinking, the key to breaking your unhealthy relationship patterns, and so much more. No more feeling like a failure who will never find true love. No more self-medicating and ending up feeling even more miserable. And no more feeling like you'll never be someone who deserves an amazing partner. Sound good? You'll discover a new way to finally feel validated and loved. To stop trying to get your self-worth from the very people who tear it down. And to put you in control of your own happiness. So you never surrender that control to another person again in as little as 8 weeks. Register now for my free online class at beyondyourbreakup.com/free class. That's beyondyourbreakup.com/free class.
Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live, as always. You're invited to join us, 603-283-6160, if you would like to weigh in. Again, that number is 603-283-6160. With you in the studio tonight, it's Aria.
It's Ian.
And Bonnie.
And we're talking about Jack Dorsey here, who has set up a crypto defense fund. And we speculated that it was largely about protecting people from Craig Wright. And as it turns out, one of the first lawsuits they intend to take on with this new Bitcoin defense fund is defending someone from Craig Wright's crazy wife. So we were sort of right about that.
Yeah.
Because from what we can see, the only threat to Bitcoin developers that has happened is Craig Wright and his crazy wife. To be fair, he's also crazy, but so is she.
Yeah.
So Craig Wright is crazy, but that's sort of a given if you've ever listened to us.
For listeners, he's the guy who claims to be the guy that gets the most attention for claiming to be Satoshi Nakamoto. There have been more than one person that may have made that claim, but this guy gets a lot of attention because he will sue you if you don't agree with him.
I tend to think, you know, if Satoshi Nakamoto is still alive, mm-hmm. there's a decent chance he's that guy in that Brazilian prison whose name mm-hmm. I don't even remember now. That's the most compelling story I've heard yet, but
Chris Wade agrees with that too. He said that he looked more into it after that caller called about it, and he said he's pretty convinced now.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm convinced, but if I had to make a bet on a living person who I was aware of being Satoshi Nakamoto, that would be the person.
It would make so much sense that he was in jail.
Yeah, because otherwise, you know, it raises the question of why has Satoshi never moved any of the Bitcoin? Well, either Satoshi is dead or Satoshi's in jail, or for whatever reason, Satoshi just has money and doesn't need to sell any of that Bitcoin. Who knows?
Or Satoshi is God.
Who has someone, huh?
He's God. He came into a human life form and he hasn't come back.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I see. Because there's no reason to, right? He did what he came here to do. So Jack Dorsey, in addition to setting up this crypto defense fund, he's also setting up a decentralized exchange. And one thing we neglected to mention was that he changed the name of Square to Block.
Recently.
Which is pretty creative.
Similar to how Facebook changed their name to Meta.
Which isn't mm-hmm. creative.
No, it's stupid. I actually have a follow-up about the Metaverse that I want to get into tonight. This tech guy, I don't remember exactly who he is or what he's for, but...
Oh, I had that story too.
Okay. The one where
somebody's attacking it.
Comparing the Metaverse hype to propaganda he experienced in the Soviet Union as a child. So we're going to get into that. But before we do, let's talk about Jack Dorsey's decentralized exchange, because I know we've had this story
for quite a while. Yeah. This is interesting because it's not really a decentralized exchange. And let me explain this here, because the website, by the way, for this thing, it's not working. The only thing
that's a promising sign.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't exist yet. They basically have a white paper at this point. I mean, at what stage they are in actually developing this thing, I don't know, but it must be very early if they don't even have like a splash page with a sign up your email address here to learn more. You go to their website, tbdex.io, and there's literally a 404 error that comes up. So there's nothing there. But at /whitepaper.pdf or something, you can actually get the PDF. But the story from Cointelegraph.com, Jack Dorsey released a white paper. This was in November. Detailing plans for Square, now Block's, decentralized, quote-unquote, Bitcoin exchange, TBDEX. Unlike most decentralized...
That seems so strange to me, since they sort of function as a centralized Bitcoin exchange already.
They do.
So do they want to decentralize that aspect of their business?
No. Let me get into this here.
Is it going to be unrelated to Block at all?
Block, I guess, is going to be involved. I pulled up the white paper and was looking at it during the news break there, just to kind of try to get a little bit more detailed than what they go over in this.
I'm curious, does it actually look like a white paper, or does it look like a brochure, a sales pitch?
No, it's a white paper. It's an 18-page, boring, technical
That's good,
white
because
paper.
When all of these scam coins were coming out back in 2016, 2017, there were two types of white papers. There was the boring one that you would expect a white paper to be, and then there was the one that was clearly a sales brochure being disguised as a white paper. So I'm glad to hear that his is actually a white paper that is attempting to solve a problem rather than sell a product.
Yeah, this is a strange pitch because at one point... it claims that this is a permissionless system, meaning that a permissionless generally means that you don't have to ask permission to join and to participate in the system.
Right.
But that seems to only be for what they're calling the participating financial institutions. So these are entities that can offer liquidity services on the upcoming so-called decentralized networks.
Like they
banks? Banks?
That's not really clear. I mean, I presume that that would be included. It says PFIs will be identified via what are called, they keep using acronyms in here, DID, which I don't remember what that one is, and VCs, which stands for verified credentials. DID is a decentralized identifier. Again, I've not read the thing in full. But
and I have one more question before you get into it. Why did they give it this name? Because I can't even remember what it is right now. TD what?
TBDEX.
TBDEX. What is that? It's such
a
bad name.
I'm going to guess it stands for the block DEX, but I'm not, I don't know. I don't know what it stands for.
What is TB?
I'm guessing it stands for the block, but I have no idea.
Tuberculosis DEX.
Anyway,
To be decentralized, as in not decentralized, but we plan to do it one day.
PFIs can be, but are not limited to fintech companies. Fintech stands for financial tech, technical. Regional banks, institutional banks, large institutional banks, or other financial institutions. So just from that just hearing that is a turnoff to me, the fact that they're going to be involving institutions.
The ones that, Bitcoin was created to destroy.
Yeah, the ones that'll shut down your account if they find out that you're using Bitcoin, those ones.
And it's only permissionless for them, so how could this be decentralized? I don't know.
It's
someone's
not
granting them permission to not need permission.
So they're not going to use a trustless model, according to Cointelegraph.com, and therefore will not feature its own governance token. Instead, it is a message protocol designed to facilitate trust relationships without relying on a federation to control access. I don't really know what all that means, but...
Well, if you have to trust something, then it's not going to be openly able for anybody to audit, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be open source. That's a good question, but it won't.
I don't want to have anything to do with, bringing banks into the cryptocurrency space.
Yeah, just that alone is a reason enough to be turned off by this, but also here's the real reason to be turned off. So the TBDEX also intends to include many features that make it far less decentralized than a standard decentralized exchange as we've come to know them. Like a standard decentralized exchange, you show up, it doesn't ask you who you are. You just have an anonymous wallet that you connect to it. Usually they're on the Ethereum network. That's most of them are on the Ethereum, but there's more of them out there. Cosmos has them. Binance Smart Chain has them. So there are other alternatives out there. You show up with your anonymous wallet. It tells you connect the wallet. Then you give it whichever wallet you want to connect, MetaMask or, hardware wallets. There's usually a variety of different options. You authorize it in your wallet. They still have no idea who you are. If you're coming in on a VPN, they don't know where you are. And then you're in. You're in the exchange. You can say, okay, I have Ethereum. I want to exchange it for this other Ethereum token over here, whatever that might be, Dogecoin, or I guess Dogecoin's not an Ethereum token, but there's probably somebody that made a Dogecoin Ethereum token. And then you do your exchanges. The exchange takes a fee from the the transaction, and you go away. And then if you want to come back, you come back, and that's it.
Sounds promising. All of the decentralized exchanges that I've ever used were just for Ethereum and Ethereum tokens. I would love to see that expanded.
Yeah, there are a few more now. I think there's a lot more than a few.
But so you can actually use one of these decentralized exchanges to swap Bitcoin for Bitcoin Cash or whatever.
That is being developed. It's called Thor Chain right now, and that does exist. It is out there. It's been hacked a couple of times.
Unfortunate.
But it hasn't been hacked in 6 months. So
and they paid their people back.
They did make good on the hack, and they did hire some red teams to go in and audit their code and do some white hat kind of hacking on it to try to secure even more.
They're going to require
Know Your Customer on Jack Dorsey's so-called decentralized exchange.
I'm assuming there's other reasons it's not really going to be decentralized as well.
That's the number one reason. Know Your Customer means you're not decentralized.
We're going to continue talking about Jack Dorsey's, quote, decentralized exchange. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live, where your calls and thoughts are welcome. 603-283-6160 if you'd like to weigh in. Again, that number 603-283-6160. With you tonight is Aria, Bonnie, and Ian, and we've been telling you about how Intercoin can help any business or organization launch their own currency or raise money using their own token. Well, now Intercoin has launched its investor token. That's ITR. And you can find it at xmarkets.com. That's exmarkets.com. It's also on Uniswap. You can find links to both of those on their website. That's intercoin.org. Buy and sell some Intercoin. Pick up some for yourself. That's the Intercoin Investor Token. And you just might be advancing the cause of liberty around the world. Check them out. It's intercoin.org. We've been talking about Jack Dorsey here and Bitcoin and his, quote, decentralized exchange that is going to allow banks, from what we can understand of his scheme, banks can come in and they don't have to get permission. They have a permissionless system set up for these institutions. I think they even cited banks specifically now that
yes,
I remember.
Yes, they did.
But the average person is going to have to deal with some sort of KYC. So it's
Know Your Customer.
Yes. So it's not at all a decentralized exchange.
It's just that the banks don't need permission from Jack Dorsey's exchange, but
that's my understanding.
Won't they eventually need permission in some way from the government, because he can't grant them that?
Well, the government gang requires that these companies be Know Your Customer compliant, meaning that they have to ask everybody who they do business with who they are, where they're from, what their grandma, who their grandma was, what their bra size is, all these personal identifying information that is so invasive.
Some of them get ridiculously invasive.
Yeah, and then even after you've provided the information, if you send a transfer that's too much in their opinion, or they don't like X, Y, or Z thing about it or whatever, they'll freeze the transaction and they'll freeze your account.
Or they just don't like your answers.
Yeah. Or they'll just close your account.
It is arbitrary and asinine, and it hasn't been a problem for me in quite a long time, but it is annoying having to deal with these cryptocurrency exchanges, because they will do stuff like this. If you make repeated purchases of, I don't know, $50 from Kraken, they're going to stop you at the third one and say, no, we suspect this is a duplicate transaction, so we put this on hold for the next 5 days.
For your benefit, where you're like, I wanted to buy now, and now you can't.
And their solution is, well, instead, spend $50.01, and then $50.02. That way, it's always unique and different. Or you could just let me say, yep, nope, that's on purpose. Yeah. Or let my bank deal with that, because that's the bank's problem, not yours.
Yeah, my little sister was just trying to buy crypto from, I think it was Coinbase, and...
Well, Coinbase is the devil.
At first, it was letting her spend $700 a day, and then all of a sudden, it was just no, $150. No,
wasn't it $77 for the first day?
And I think it was just one day that it let her spend that much money, and then it kept going down and down and down, and to the point that it was making her buy $25 a day.
It's bizarre. I hate Coinbase, though. But let's go to the phones. We have Mac calling from Colorado. Mac, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hi, yes. Craig Wright, claiming to be Satoshi Nakamoto. Who else has claimed to be Satoshi?
Plenty of people have made the claim.
There are other people, but they're just not very memorable.
I see. Who are the ones that are memorable to you guys?
Like I said, if I could remember one, I would tell you, but I don't recall.
Oh.
Do you think that Satoshi that Craig Wright is Satoshi Nakamoto?
No, okay. Absolutely not.
I mean, he's the loudest person who's making the claim, and he's got the most money, and he's willing to sue people about it. So he gets the media coverage. A lot of these people claiming to be Satoshi, they may tweet about it or something, but they don't have, you know, CoinDesk writing articles or Cointelegraph writing articles about how they're Satoshi Nakamoto or claiming to be Satoshi Nakamoto.
All right. Okay. Have you heard of a name, Adam Back?
I've heard of him. He is a programmer or a CEO or something of Blockstream, which is a company.
Is a British cryptographer and cypherpunk. He is the CEO of Blockstream, which is co-founded in 2014, invested Hashcash, which is used in the Bitcoin mining process.
Yeah, that's Blockstream is a company, I believe, that's developing the Lightning Network, aren't they?
I wouldn't know about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's their main product that they're pushing right now.
Is your idea that this guy may be Satoshi Nakamoto?
He's definitely on the list of being likely. There is a YouTube channel, probably also on Odyssey. Have you ever heard of the YouTube channel Barely Sociable?
No. Can't say that I have.
So,
but, you know, I don't think Satoshi Nakamoto would identify the problems in Bitcoin and then take up such a terrible, clunky solution to those problems.
Right. Satoshi already had the solution to the Bitcoin network getting full. Increase the block size. I mean, originally the Bitcoin network was programmed to have no block size. And then they
added
one.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
It made sense at the time to add a block size to keep
temporarily.
The network. Yes. To keep the network from being overtaken by spam, essentially. So they implemented that, but yes, it was meant to be temporary. Get rid of the block size limit, and that will fix most of Bitcoin's problems.
And they implemented the block size while Satoshi was still active?
He did, yeah.
Oh, he did.
I believe he was involved in the implementation of the block size limit. But
it served a very specific function then, though. It wasn't just like, we're having too many transactions come through. Our miners aren't making enough money, which is why they continue to exist today.
I don't buy the idea that Adam Back is, that is to say, the person who runs Blockstream is Satoshi Nakamoto for the reason you brought up, Arya, because Satoshi wouldn't have created Lightning, I don't think. And secondly, all you have to do is look at the people who are funding Blockstream, and you find out that mega banks are funding Blockstream. Banks like AXA, which people in the United States have never heard of AXA Bank before, but if you're in Britain, you may know about AXA. It is one of the largest banks on the planet. It's based out of Belgium. And
I've never heard of it.
They're a major investor in Blockstream, as is the Digital Currency Group, which is a subgroup of other investors, including MasterCard. So I just don't buy that Satoshi would, you know, get all cozy with the banking industry when he created Bitcoin to take them down.
Yeah, and he stated that explicitly in the early newsletters. He even cited the 2007 recession that was created and caused by banks as being one of the reasons that he decided to come up with a solution to take down that financial system.
Right. So I don't buy it.
I don't either. Thank you so much for the call tonight, Mac. I don't know who Satoshi Nakamoto is. I like to think that the guy or girl or group is still around getting some sort of enjoyment from this world-changing technology that they've created. Mm-hmm. I would love to imagine that Satoshi Nakamoto is sitting on a beach somewhere,
just
super
laughing,
wealthy, going, man, I changed the world, right? It would sadden me to think that Satoshi Nakamoto didn't
get
live.
To see this.
Right. Yeah. So I prefer to think Satoshi's alive, and if it was me and I was Satoshi Nakamoto, that's what I would be doing, is hanging on a beach somewhere, retired. I mean, he's done his work to make the world a better place.
Yep.
That's another reason I don't buy that Craig Wright is Satoshi Nakamoto, is another ideological reason, beyond the fact that he has refused to prove his claims.
Right, which would be easy.
By, like, moving some Bitcoin in the original wallets. But the other one is that he supports governments. He's specifically spoken in favor of the government and against anarchism. And well, I don't buy that Satoshi would make that statement.
Craig Wright needs the government in order to sue people. So, of course, he loves the government.
Right.
What are your thoughts on Satoshi Nakamoto Bitcoin? Do you think Satoshi's sitting on a beach somewhere drinking a margarita? 603-283-6160. There's more coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live's video archives have been on Library for years. Library is an uncensorable, decentralized, blockchain-based media sharing protocol, and we're big fans of it here on Free Talk Live. In 2020, Library launched Odyssey, a video sharing website to compete with YouTube, and it's really taking off, now with over 1 million channels, many of whom are disaffected YouTube creators. During YouTube's crackdown for not towing the government line on COVID, the Free Talk Live YouTube channel started receiving strikes and could be completely taken down at any moment. Thankfully, Odyssey started offering live streaming, so we're now streaming live every night and posting our video archives permanently to Odyssey. You can watch live or anytime on our Odyssey channel by visiting video.freetalklive.com. If you want to go all in, download the desktop app at lbry.com, and then every video archive you watch, you'll help seed and keep it online forever. At minimum, we ask you visit video.freetalklive.com and follow us on Odyssey today. video.freetalklive.com.
It's Free Talk Live, where you're invited to call in, share your thoughts and opinions. 603-283-6160 if you'd like to do that. Again, that number is 603-283-6160. With you in the studio tonight, it's Aria.
It's Ian.
And Bonnie.
And we're talking about Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto, and one of the reasons I prefer to think of Satoshi still being alive is because of the way that Bitcoin and cryptocurrency have evolved in ways that no one could have predicted. Like now there's a blockchain-based video sharing platform. And I'm sure...
Odyssey.
Yes.
Library, lbry.com.
And I'm sure when Satoshi sat down to write the Bitcoin white paper, he never envisioned that being a result.
Actually, we should be clear. It's not so much a platform as it is a protocol.
That's true.
Which is more important.
Odyssey is a platform.
Odyssey is the platform. Library is the protocol. It's a media sharing protocol. So it's not just for video. It's primarily used for video.
Yeah, I clicked on one that was a picture the other day. I was like, what the heck is this?
If you want to upload, I think you can put a PDF up there. You can put an audio file up there.
You can put songs. You can put books. Yeah. You can put any file, basically, yes, that can be turned into an attachment. You can upload to Odyssey. To Library. It is primarily video because that's what people prefer to do.
Yes.
But presumably, you could also just type up an article and throw it
yes,
on there.
You can.
Yeah, this picture, I was like looking up a subject. I thought I was clicking on a video about it, and it just picked up or, you know, loaded a big picture, and then he had his opinions about it. It was like an artistic picture.
You can put a blog
picture.
Post up there, for sure.
And that's Library. I think the library is probably, the URL is probably lbry.com. Or you can just, you know, view it on Odyssey, which is their platform that utilizes the library network to make things easier. We actually stream there. You can find our channel at video.freetalklive.com.
That's right.
And there we don't actually have to worry about being censored. We can say what we want without worrying about YouTube kicking us off. Now, to be fair, we've been streaming now to YouTube continually for like 6 weeks without being suspended again. So maybe they're dialing back their oppression just a little bit.
I think it's just random based on whoever the hater is that's reporting our channel.
Well, they probably realize that if they report us, then they can't complain about us endlessly on YouTube because we're not streaming there, which means they have to go to Odyssey, where cryptocurrency enthusiasts and actual fans of the show
will
just eviscerate
crypto,
them.
Yeah.
So that's video.freetalklive.com.
Good point.
We have Sarah on the line from New Mexico. Sarah, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yes. Have you guys ever heard of Joyce Meyer Ministries?
Yes.
No, who is that?
She's a Christian lady that my mom used to listen to. She has like short hair.
She's like a TV Christian
kind
of person?
Yeah, TV, but you can go to her in real life. I think she's like Southern.
Oh, yeah.
What about her, Sarah?
Well, I think she's from St. Louis, Missouri, but one thing that I really appreciative of her ministry is that she's got rescue homes for the human trafficked girls all over the world. So that's really important to me. because you know, so if people want to help these homes, you know, you could donate to her ministry. Like, and I do a lot of times. So it's actually, her website is joycemeyer.org. So it's, she's definitely nonprofit. She's not about making money. It's a church. So, but they, and then she'll also give you a free magazine. I get a monthly magazine about all the help that she's doing around the world. And I've seen stories about girls in Thailand, and she's got a dream center in St. Louis, and she's got one in Los Angeles.
Aren't you a communist?
Yes, yeah, Sarah, I'm curious. Why aren't governments solving these problems?
Well, I mean, they do try. The government, there's a lot of government funded, but also...
But yeah, Joyce, they're not doing a good enough job, so Joyce Meyer has to step in.
This says that Joyce Meyer's net worth is $9.5 million.
Okay.
God blessed her. Well, you know, and she's doing.
I believe that, but you're always saying capitalist people who have too much money should be forcibly put into jail or killed. So that's why I'm confused.
I don't think that God blessed her. I think that silly Christians blessed her.
Well, the thing about it is that, you know what? I'm glad she lives in a nice house. I mean, she's an example of, like, how she gives of herself. She gives to feed people and bring water to them, hospital care, and she rescues these, you know, prostitute girls. And then she gets to, you know, drive a nice car, live in a nice house. And,
according,
you know,
to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Meyer has a $10 million corporate jet. Her husband has a $107,000 silver gray Mercedes sedan. They live in a $2 million home and have other houses, apparently worth another $2 million for her children. $20 million headquarters furnished with $5.7 million worth of furniture, artwork, glassware, and the latest equipment and machinery, including a $30,000 malachite round table, a $23,000 marble-topped antique commode.
Yeah, wait. Shouldn't all those things be sold and then the... profits divvied up and given to the homeless people of New Mexico or something, Sarah?
Well, you know what? If I really lived in a truly communist society, I think that would happen. But we still live in a mixed economy in a capitalist America. I mean,
hold on. It's either a mixed economy or it's a capitalist economy. And I'll give it to you that it's a mixed economy. I mean, that's economics 101.
The thing is, I could wish what I want, but I have to live in the world where it is what it is. So it's a mixed economy.
You're giving this woman money, right? You said you donate to her?
Right. Yes, I do.
How do you feel about buying her custom-made toilet with the marble on it or whatever
it was? She obviously supports it.
I mean, you paid for that, Sarah. You bought this lady's toilet.
No, but she also rescues girls that are trafficked into homes.
Don't
all
you
over
think
Africa?
That people who are, you know, those people who are in the ministry positions of the world should be, I don't know, a little more humble? Or is it okay to just go jet setting around with a $10 million jet and, you know, whatever other $1 million spendings on lavishness?
Well, I mean, to me, I think it's okay. I think it's okay because she, you know, brings water to people, you know, free health care, and feeds people all around the world. She's got orphanages. She's got...
imagine how much more she could do if she wasn't flying around in a $10 million private jet.
I want to clarify something here. I don't think that she should be punished for this. I don't think that it should be illegal. I think, you know, if you want to support this woman... That's your choice. If you think it's fine to support her lavish lifestyle, that's her reward for doing the good things that you think she's done, then that's fine. That's your choice. To me, it's a turnoff. I think that that kind of lavish spending on the part of a minister represents someone who maybe has their priorities a little bit mistaken.
Sure. And it's very un-Christian. You know, the whole mythos of Christianity is that these good deeds that she's doing here on earth, rescuing people from being sex trafficked or whatever, she's going to be rewarded for that in heaven. She's not supposed to get a reward for it here on earth.
That is so 2,000 years ago. Haven't you heard of the prosperity message?
I actually haven't. What is that?
I'm surprised.
Have you heard of the prosperity message?
You she's know, like, asking you right. seriously about it.
No, I have not heard about it.
Yeah, the prosperity message is that if you give of something that you have, you actually get more back in return. That's God's math. That's God's mathematics.
In what part of the Bible did that originate?
Sarah, I don't personally disagree with what you're saying. I mean, I think there is a like this universal rule that says you should give in order to receive. That you shouldn't just receive. You should put it out there into the universe, and it will come back to you tenfold. However, you don't have to accept a $1 million mansion. You know, you could just say, no, that's okay. I could live in a $200,000 house. So I don't know if I buy the whole idea that these guys are truly selling the way they're selling it.
But, Sarah, thank you so much for the call tonight. And I want to reiterate, I'm not opposed to such an idea of, you know, getting back what you put out there. I don't know if I believe that it's there or believe that it isn't there, but it's certainly not corresponding to any part of Christian doctrine. Mm-hmm. That's something Christians just made up to justify the existence of people like Joyce Meyer and Joel Osteen.
The universe didn't send her the $23,000 commode. She ordered that somewhere.
Yes, probably from Amazon. 603-283-6160. There's more coming up. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, where you are invited to join us, weigh in with your thoughts and opinions. 603-283-6160, if you'd like to do that. Again, that number 603-283-6160. With you in the studio tonight, it's Aria.
It's Ian.
And it's Bonnie.
And we've been pretty vocal critics of this metaverse thing that that the media is really trotting out there and trying to sell people on. And
it's got multi-billion dollar companies pushing it.
It does. One of which is Facebook, one of the most successful media companies in the world. Heavily, I mean, they even rebranded their company in order to focus on this metaverse nonsense. And we're not alone in this. I don't think it's going to sell to the average person. I don't think the average person working at the convenience store has ever heard of this metaverse thing. And I don't think they're going to be sold on it when they hear it. But the propaganda being put out around it, because we are constantly seeing puff pieces from the media that's just praising this technology and how it's, oh my goodness, there was a wedding in the metaverse. And this opens up so many possibilities of things that we've always dreamed of and that have been going on the internet for the last 20 years. Only the media didn't talk about it because it was nerds in World of Warcraft or whatever and not your average soccer mom. Mm-hmm.
If people didn't get married on World of Warcraft, I would be very shocked.
I'm sure they did. I can't think of anyone who
they
specifically did it, but yeah.
Yeah.
So a tech founder born in the Soviet Union is now comparing metaverse hype to the communist propaganda that he experienced as a child.
Wow.
Phil Libin is the founder of the note-taking app Evernote and the CEO of the video conferencing company Mm-hmm.
I've used their app, Evernote.
Have you?
Yeah. It's like a little note-taking app, and it works.
Yeah,
it saves your notes to the cloud. All it does.
I would rather save mine to my device. That's always the issue I have with these note-taking things.
Yeah.
It's like, why can't I just create a text document on my phone that just stays on my phone? But that's a minor thing.
Nice part about the cloud is if you break your phone, then you can still get back into the thing.
Yeah, I was shocked that whenever I got my into my iCloud or whatever it is account, iPhone account, it didn't save anything except my notes in my notepad.
What do you mean when the Fed stole your phone?
Yeah, and then I got a new iPhone and I tried to connect it to my iCloud account.
So they didn't even save your phone book?
Maybe my phone book.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, ideally you should have your notes saved on the device and in the cloud in order to protect it from accidental destruction.
I suppose it depends on the note, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. If it's super private, then yeah, you don't want it in somebody else's possession.
So Phil made these comments in a podcast hosted by the tech journalist Eric Newcomer, the New York Times' Katie Benner, and Insider's Tom Doughton. And it was released yesterday. Libin expressed deep skepticism of tech companies touting the metaverse and drew a comparison with his experience growing up in Leningrad, Russia.
Hmm.
I went to first grade in the Soviet Union, he said. I was subjected to a lot of Soviet propaganda, and I was told as a little kid repeatedly, communism doesn't exist yet. We haven't built communism yet. We're building towards communism, but it's not communism yet.
We just need to kill a few more people.
What you see around you, this horrible, horrible place, isn't communism. We're building towards it. It's going to be great when it gets here.
Wow.
So I really see his point here, because that's pretty much what they are saying about the metaverse. And if you actually look into the technology, it's pretty clear that they're building towards something, but they're in the early stages of it. And he goes on, you know, you can smell a bad idea before it's fully built. So I don't want to hear, oh, yeah, the metaverse doesn't exist yet. No, no, no. All this stuff, all this stupid, useless, crappy stuff that exists right now, that's not the metaverse. The metaverse is coming. It's coming. Which is a fair point, because they're not making the claim that Decentraland, or whatever Facebook's is called, because I don't remember
Horizon
now.
Horizon Worlds.
Yes. Is the metaverse. They're saying, oh, this is proof that the metaverse is coming.
I think they're claiming, Facebook at the very least, is claiming that that is their metaverse app. That's their first one, so there's more coming. But that's almost worse. That's their first metaverse app. That's their proof of concept. Look, you can do things. You can build things. You can make a little world thing. I think somebody's got like a mini golf game, and somebody else has a laser tag game
there. I still think it is what he's saying, if they're saying, but it's going to get better.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course it's going to get better. I mean, that's inevitable. Technology is going to improve. The tech is going to get better. The virtual reality headsets are going to be better in the future. They're going to be wireless at some point.
Yeah, that's a given.
They're going to get lighter. And the software is going to get better. There's no doubt about it. The question is that where people are going to want to spend their time? And that's what they're constantly trying to hound you into believing.
Yes,
right,
that it's going to be great. Everyone's going to love it. And it's going to be mass adopted. And I don't see it. The word metaverse.
I hope you're right, Aria. I really do. Because if it is mass adopted, that's a scary world of people that are even more disconnected from one another than they've ever been to me.
I think Facebook and these other companies are deluded in thinking that it's going to be mass adopted. But the average person, I genuinely believe, if you show them this technology and put on one of these headsets and let them play around in Decentraland or Horizon Worlds or whatever, they're going to go, This is garbage.
This
yeah, this is absolutely horrible.
Yeah, what's the average amount of time that a totally like somebody who's never been in VR before would keep that headset on to be in Horizon Worlds?
And what I don't understand is, what is different about the metaverse and all the VR games that have existed already?
Well, the VR games were better. They looked better,
they look better,
and they were more fun to be in.
And even just things people have described to me, because I've never played one, have sounded cooler, like Aria going underground, or I don't know, they do ones where
There are some really cool VR games out there.
Yeah, like if you want to play a game where you shoot other people, there's a bunch of way better ones than I'm sure of what you're going to get in Facebook's little program.
What is the difference between the metaverse and just VR games?
There isn't one, except the Facebook version looks and plays terribly.
I'll answer that.
They are video games, as far as I can tell. They're just bad.
The answer to that question, Bonnie, from what we've read, is they're selling the metaverse idea. The metaverse is, at this point, a concept that they're trying to shoehorn people into buying that doesn't truly exist in the way that it's been envisioned, right? Like, there are VR applications. There's a variety of them. They're not all games. There's some other there's one where you can paint.
Or you can go to conferences, apparently, in VR.
Right. Horizon Worlds has that. They have a conference room where you can sit in a conference room instead of being in a Zoom call. You can sit in a room with floating torsos and have an actual, quote unquote meeting. So they're trying to basically take VR outside of the realm of gaming and mass market that in a way that is trying to pitch the idea of, oh, this will be your life. You will live in this world, and it will be better. So that's the pitch behind the metaverse. It isn't just that you can go and play laser tag, or shoot somebody, or play mini golf. It's that you'll get to socialize. You'll get to have your work meetings. You won't have to go to work. You'll be in the virtual reality metaverse. Need to go shopping? Just pull up the Walmart app, and you can just grab virtual items off the shelf. And you'll never have to leave your house. It'll all be delivered to you, especially for those of you that are afraid of leaving your house because you believe COVID is going to infect you and you might get sick and die or something. So they're pushing this at the right time. Right, because there's a tremendous wave of fear among people.
I don't think they are, because the technology doesn't seem to be there.
True. I mean, that's true, but they're starting the push now. And true. And there it happens to coincide with a time where people are now more than ever working from home, and they're now more than ever irrationally afraid of going outside in a lot of cases. So there is a market for this, but I do agree with you, Aria, that it's certainly not, I don't think it's as big as they think that it's going to be, and I certainly hope it's not as big as they think it's going to be.
Well, what they're portraying it as reminds me of Ready Player One, where there's this massive lobby, that's the metaverse, and it contains all of these other little worlds. If you want to go, you know, play laser tag or the mm-hmm. first-person shooter on the ice planet, you can do that. Or if you want to drive a race car, you can do that. Those are all just different games within the metaverse or different things you can do within the metaverse, right? That's what they're sort of trying to paint the metaverse as being. But your average person has already experienced VR to some extent through...
Have they?
The average person I could think of, yeah.
What percentage of people have actually put on a VR helmet? I don't think it's that high. I don't think it's that high.
I think it probably is, because VR was really popular during the... Like, their nephew or someone had a VR headset, so they tried it out and they played one of these games. Or a friend of theirs had one, so they tried it out. And I think the average person is going to see what Facebook has put forward, and they're going to immediately see that this technology is 15, 20 years out of date.
I think the issue with it getting mainstream is you have to have a whole room to play VR in, where you can move your arms around and stuff. Like, we don't have that in this house.
We do kind of now, but you literally have to have an entire
large space. No, I'm putting a couch in there.
Cleared out. According to a survey in 2021, 23% of Americans have tried a VR or AR headset.
What was the percentage?
What's AR?
AR is 23%.
Oh, augmented reality.
Augmented reality. So
yeah, I would have assumed it was higher than that.
Of that group, 31% of the 23% own a headset. The rest of them have tried one on.
603-283-6160 if you want to join us. It's Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live, and your calls and thoughts are welcome. 603-283-6160 if you'd like to weigh in. That's 603-283-6160. And we're talking about the metaverse here. And we like making fun of it because we've seen it in action. None of us have used a VR headset to explore Horizon Worlds, but we've seen videos of people doing it, and it's so bad that it would be funny, except for how much the media is pushing it as this next great big thing that's going to revolutionize the world, and it isn't. And I said previously that I suspect the average person has already experienced VR and is going to immediately know when they see this VR world that, if this is the best you have to offer, come talk to me in a couple of decades. Imagine being told, hey, there's a new style of 3D movie coming out. So you go
again?
To watch it. You're super excited. They finally have figured out the technology. And then they hand you those red and blue glasses. And they say, now, enjoy the movie. And that's what Meta and this metaverse nonsense is. It's taking VR technology that's gone way past those stupid red and blue glasses. Mm-hmm. And it's bringing back the red and blue glasses.
That's an interesting analogy. But I did look up the numbers. According to a study done by Harris Poll in the summer of 2021, so fairly recent, they talked to 2010 U.S. adults about virtual and augmented reality. Now, can one of you define augmented reality?
Pokemon Go. It's like where you scan an environment with your phone or something like that. Amazon also has the ability to do this, and it augments that onto your screen, like it'll add a Pokemon there or let you see what a desk will look like if positioned in a part of your room or something like that.
I thought that was pretty crazy.
You used an app like that?
Well, on Amazon, it will let you see if you're looking at like furniture, it will let you turn on your camera and look at your room and see what it would look like in your room.
Wow, I didn't know that.
It's sort of clunky though, because you can't fully make it the right angle and size and stuff.
Yeah, how does it know what the size of the room is?
Well, it doesn't. It basically just takes the picture of the desk and slaps it on there. Like if it was just a PNG where it was just the desk and then a transparency layer and you had a picture of your bedroom, That's what it would
do.
That
sounds really clunky.
I mean, just throw it on there.
I would think it would want to know how large the room is, so you would know relatively how large the desk is going to be. Those would seem to be like basic features.
That would be helpful. I think you can pinch and, you know, spread your fingers out to zoom in and make the desk bigger or whatever. I don't remember. I've only played with it once, and
yeah,
I was like,
too.
Okay, that could be useful, yeah. But
I'll give you a useful augmented reality app. We were walking, one of our walks with Coconut around the neighborhood, and Bonnie was saying, that's a really bright, you know, planet
star.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
And which one is that? And
I was like, it can't be a star. It's so bright.
And I don't know what it is, but I bet you there's an app that we can pull up.
Oh, something like Celestia or one of these?
I don't remember what it was called.
That might have been it.
Yeah. Anyway, free app, and you just point it at the sky, and based on, you know, where it, your GPS position, the phone knows exactly where you are, right?
It was Venus.
Yeah, we figured out what it was thanks to that. I mean, that's something
that's
we would
really
have
cool.
Had to
I didn't
have, like,
know they had that on mobile. There was a laptop version of it several years ago that I really loved, but it was a bit different from that. Like, this would, you could actually go out there and look at other stars like you were in a spaceship sort of thing,
It
was accurate to where they actually were. So it was pretty cool. Not augmented reality, though.
Yeah, so augmented reality is wherever you have an app that kind of assists you with whatever you're trying to do in real
life.
Google
Translate does this as well. Yeah. It can detect the text on your screen and modify it into a language of your choosing.
That's also one of the most useful apps. If you travel internationally, that's so useful. You can, like, scan a menu at a restaurant and actually, not scan, but just literally hold your phone over the menu, and it's a little clunky. It doesn't always get the translations perfect. Sometimes it changes the translation as you're sitting over it. But for the most part, you can kind of figure out what, like, a menu item is going to be, or what a directional sign says as you're trying to, you know, walk around somewhere.
Or if you have a bilingual boyfriend and you're trying to read his diary.
Sure.
I guess, yeah. Are you saying you did that?
No.
Okay.
No, definitely not. Never.
So 23% of Americans, according to this survey last year, have tried a VR AR headset. So you said that was actually less than what you thought it was going to be. I said it was more. I figured it'd be like 10%.
When I say I expected it to be closer to 40%, I'm not including anyone over the age of 60. So I do have to make that clarification. I imagine your average person over 60 years old has never even seen a VR headset.
Well, in that case, then you are absolutely right. Because when they break it down by generations, millennials, 42% have tried augmented or virtual reality. Now, they didn't break out which.
See, I'd expect it to be higher for millennials, though, and lower for Gen X.
Yeah, and then when you add in augmented, I have a hard time believing that only 40% of millennials played Pokemon Go. Maybe they didn't know what augmented reality meant, because I just feel like more of them played it.
I don't know. I presume that they were told in the survey, like, what it is. That way they knew, but I don't know. I don't know what the questions were exactly. They also did a question of how excited are you about virtual and augmented reality? Because there's a difference between trying it and being excited about it. And when you look at millennials, again, people roughly between the ages of 25 and 40, according to the survey here, 17% were very excited. 26% were somewhat excited there. So that's a good chunk of the millennials who are pretty enthusiastic.
What year did this come out?
This was this 2021, summer of 2021, so fairly recent. Gen X, 13%, very excited, 20% somewhat excited. And Gen Z, a little bit more excited, with 11% very excited and 31% somewhat excited. Boomers, barely anybody cares.
Well, that's convenient, because we don't care what the boomers think.
Yeah.
But I don't like that they're including VR and augmented reality in the same sort of niche here, because to me those are very, very different things.
Yeah.
However, I was curious, so I checked it out. Pokemon Go, as of the end of 2020, had been downloaded. This doesn't mean unique players. Had
right,
because
you can download it once and then delete it and download it again. That counts.
1.1 billion times.
Whoa.
Globally.
Yes, that is globally.
And I would just have to think that millennials were the number one group, because that, like, Pokemon was
that's what they
millennials
grew up with, right?
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it came out when I was a 1-year-old, I think, but, like, for people who were kids
or
teenagers.
If you ever say anything like that again, I'm leaving.
Wait, what did she say? Sorry, I was looking
Pokemon,
at stats.
I think, came out in 1997, which I would be a 1-year-old.
Okay, I feel better then. I thought Pokemon Go came out when you were 1 year old.
Okay.
I was like, there's no way that much time has passed. But
no.
Okay. She's not that young.
No, I know she's not that young. I thought I was that old.
The time just moved really fast.
Pokemon has definitely been around a really long time, though. Several decades. I'm at peace with that. But Pokemon Go, you were one? 20 years went past me and I didn't notice?
I think it came out in 2015 or 2014.
Yeah, I don't remember when it was, but it wasn't that long ago. Six, 7 years ago, maybe.
So one of the other interesting statistics from this first study here, again, looking at both VR and augmented reality together, 90% of those who've tried a headset, so again, only about 23% of Americans, if you include the boomers, have tried it. And 90% of those who've tried it said they're likely to use one again, with 2/3 saying they will definitely use one again. So that does suggest that there's a lot of growth opportunity for things like the metaverse in the future, if indeed it is that satisfying. But on the other hand, another study from like 2020, I think, only shows that about 55% of users are satisfied with virtual reality. So again, this other study is only looking at virtual reality, while the first one combines virtual reality with augmented reality. And one of the biggest complaints about virtual reality, which you don't get with augmented reality, is motion sickness. There's nearly more than half of the users have at some point experienced motion sickness, with over 13% experiencing it frequently, so they're not going to use it at all. 19% sometimes, and almost 25% rarely.
Yeah, I've experienced the motion sickness only with one particular game, but it was the game that I played VR the most, probably. So, But it's not like your normal vertigo where you think, okay, well, just take the headset off and sit down for a few minutes and you'll be fine. No, the vertigo, for whatever reason, it would last hours after taking off the headset.
Common, too? Is that what other people
experience? I don't know, but that was my experience with Skyrim in VR. Sure, it was fun. It looked terrible. It was very pixelated, very low res.
You think the technology will make that better over time?
I don't think it can. I think it will only make it more likely that people experience vertigo, because there's a disconnect between what their brain is feeling and what their brain is perceiving. Doing. So I don't know. What do you think? It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, 603-283-6160, if you'd like to join us. 603-283-6160. With you tonight, it's Aria.
It's Ian.
It's Bonnie.
And we're raising funds with Give Directly, which is the first nonprofit that allows you to give money directly to people who are living in extreme poverty. We're raising money for families that live in Bomet and Kilifi counties in Kenya. And these are places where there is actual, real poverty, where people don't have drinking water or electricity or little things like that that are kind of critical to a person's well-being. Give Directly allows those people in those situations to make the decisions about what is going to help them the most, instead of relying on some distant aid organization to make that decision for them. And because of that, Free Talk Live is matching your donations to Give Directly up to $30,000. So if you're feeling generous, head on over to give.freetalklive.com. That's give.freetalklive.com, and help out some of these areas plagued by drought, floods, and food insecurity. There's probably not a better way to directly help families in Kenya. That's give.freetalklive.com. Making fun of the metaverse here, and you brought up during the break that the Valve Index is almost $1,000, which is pretty pricey for a VR headset.
I know a guy who's really into virtual reality. It's actually Chris's partner, our Friday night co-host. His partner is. And I asked him recently, because he's apparently tried more than one headset. You know you're in virtual reality if you've tried more than one. And he says that the Valve Index is his favorite one of all of them out there. But again, it's $1,000 for this thing. Then you got to have a ballsy PC to play this thing with. So you're talking about at least $2,000 investment if you don't already have a gaming quality PC.
And that's the part that confuses me, because I would have expected Valve, the company behind Steam.
This is a program that allows people to download software. If you've never used a computer before, if you're not a computer gamer, you don't know what that is.
But Steam is the largest video game distributor for PC on the planet.
Yeah, it's huge.
They're huge. And at one time, they took Bitcoin, and that was really awesome. They don't now because Bitcoin fees got too high. But
that's sad.
If they have a VR system, I would expect it to work the way that a PC normally works, right? It's just a 3D display that you strap to your head, and it uses its own controllers. That's how I would expect it to work. But no, once again, it has its own unique library of games. And I understand, it would be complicated to take a game not designed for VR, mm-hmm. like just whatever game, Fallout 4, and create software that, what's the word I'm looking for here, that turns that into a VR experience for you.
But that'd be fun because you blast off from like a helicopter and land in a position in Fallout.
I've never played any of the Fallouts, but that's what I would expect one of these VR headsets to do.
I think you're thinking of the game that Matt plays, which is not Fallout.
No, he plays Call of Duty.
Yeah, it's Call of Duty.
Oh, okay.
No, it's a different one. I think it's Fallout.
I played the Fallouts. I don't recall blasting off from a helicopter.
Oh, well, I've never played it. I was thinking of watching. I mean, I've only watched people, but maybe it's not Fallout. Sorry.
Actually, there was a scene with a helicopter in one of them, I think, but...
But I mean, if you think about the 3D experience from just a technical standpoint, it seems like it would be very, very easy to have the game running twice on two different screens and have them just slightly different from each other. Have the controllers able to make that happen and have the display do that, and then it can work with any PC game.
Nothing about that sounds easy to me.
Well, it wouldn't be easy for me, but the concept is easy, and that's what I would expect any of these to do. You plug in your graphics card, your graphics card does most of the work, and that's literally just a display.
Yeah, but I wonder why they don't do that.
I don't know, but everyone has their own unique little library of games, and that's the part where they lose me on it, because you have things like Vacation Simulator and Job Simulator, and I understand, you know, there's people are buying that crap, but that's not the kind of game I want to play. And the one I looked at, Vacation Simulator, I expected it to look better than Facebook's Horizon Worlds. It's about the same for the most part, except in Vacation Simulator, you don't even get a torso. You're just floating hands and a floating head.
Okay.
Because those are the parts, presumably, that you can use to interact with in the VR world.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about this guy here. He lived in the Soviet Union. He was exposed to Soviet Union propaganda. And he's pointing out that all of this stuff we're hearing, it's reminiscent of what he heard as a child.
This is an interesting comparison. I mean, we've been critical of the metaverse since we first heard about it. But to take it to the level of saying it's tantamount to Soviet propaganda, I didn't expect this. It's interesting.
The word metaverse evidently is borrowed from science fiction and refers to a future version of the internet accessed through immersive technologies such as virtual reality and augmented reality headsets. It's been pushed a lot by Mark Zuckerberg. Libin.
Reason number one to be skeptical.
Yeah, definitely. Libin, who's the guy from Russia, he's now the CEO of a couple of tech companies, described it as, quote, a gloss that uncreative people and companies put over fundamentally a lack of good ideas.
What I can't understand is if that is really what it is, if it's that Mark Zuckerberg is just like, oh, this isn't really that good of an idea, but we have to put a gloss over it, why would he get rid of Facebook, his like baby, and turn it into Meta? Like, we're rebranding everything.
Well, they didn't get rid of Facebook.
No, Facebook
well,
is
yeah, they
a
didn't
subsidiary.
Get rid of it, but now instead of Facebook, it's Meta.
Right.
And
well, he's doing what all of these people who created these enormous tech companies are doing. They created this great big thing, like Jack Dorsey did with Twitter, made himself super wealthy off it, and now he's pursuing the thing that personally interests him, which is cryptocurrency. Mark Zuckerberg is doing the same thing. He created Facebook, or stole Facebook, I don't know, and I don't care, and it made him a lot of money, so now he's using that money, and Facebook's money, presumably, to invest in technology that he cares about, which happens to be virtual reality.
Well, which is so lame.
Well, but from his perspective, I don't think virtual reality is lame technology. I think it's pretty neat, actually. But from his perspective, it makes sense. You know, Facebook's goal is to get people into their system, right? They want to get all of the planet to create a Facebook account. That's never going to happen, obviously, but that's what they want. They want as many billions of users, and I think they've had more than a billion, and they might still. They're very, very
probably
popular.
Not active users anymore, though.
Maybe, but they've been very successful at it, right? Like, they're one of the world's top, you know, largest tech corporations. And from their perspective, they got to do something fresh, right? Like, you can't keep doing the same thing in the tech world, right? You're going to get stale. You've got to try something new, and so he
Facebook's been stale.
Or you got to buy new ideas, or
and that's what they
them.
Did. That's what they did. Oculus wasn't a Facebook company, and Facebook said, "Ooh, we'll take that," and came in with billions of dollars, bought Oculus, and then okay, now Facebook is a virtual reality company.
So they are basically doing what I think you might call a pivot in the world of business. Like, okay, well, this was our main product. Now we want this to be our main product. So you know what they're trying to do is they're trying to take Facebook and move that audience into their virtual world. That's what they want to do. They want to take their existing audience. They want to grow it. They want to expand it. And they want to sell you, advertisements.
A lot more sense.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do.
I have shocking numbers about Facebook's user base, by the way, that I just want to share with people before we go out to break. Yes.
All right, I'm ready to be shocked.
2.895 billion monthly active users.
When? As of when?
As of 2020.
Okay.
1.9
That's a lot of people.
Billion people every single day.
That's a lot of people.
Almost 2 billion people using Facebook every single day.
And imagine if they could sell virtual reality headsets to 10% of them.
But see, that's what's surprising. They don't.
They don't what?
I'm into video games, and I don't see any Oculus Rift advertisements or any advertisements for the metaverse on Facebook.
Maybe it's coming.
It probably is, but it's... That's what they're saying. Mm-hmm. The metaverse is coming, just like the advertisements. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, where you can take control of the airwaves and talk about whatever is important to you. 603-283-6160 if you would like to weigh in. Again, that number is 603-283-6160. With you in the studio tonight, it's Aria.
It's Ian.
It's Bonnie.
And I like the way this living guy puts things. I'm not sure. I think I agree with him that the propaganda that we're hearing about the metaverse is very dystopian and unsettling. But I wasn't there in Soviet Russia. I'm surprised that they were saying, hey, no, this isn't communism. Communism is coming.
Yeah.
Makes sense. They didn't want people to be like, this is it. You like it?
Right. You're standing in a bread line and you're starving to death.
True.
They're telling you, no, just wait. It's coming. Just believe. You must believe.
True
in the
communism has not been tried anywhere on the country yet.
That's what Sarah said.
I mean, anywhere on the planet.
And I mean, that may or may not be true, but as you know, the meme says, okay, but almost communism has killed a ton of people, whereas almost capitalism has liberated a ton of people. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to know how bad real communism could really be if almost communism is responsible for so much death. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about the metaverse here because this guy's weighing in on it and he doesn't have a whole lot left to say, but I think it's worth hearing. There's a part of me that hates it and a part of me that fears it. But since I think it's so spectacularly stupid, there's actually not that much to fear. And I tend to agree with that as someone who has looked into some of these VR technologies. I almost bought an Oculus Quest a few months ago. Yeah, you know, they had them in stock at Walmart. It was only $300.
No kidding. They're selling these things at Walmart now.
Yeah. Occasionally. Oh, wow. Every time I go to Walmart, it's just like a ritual. I have to go through the electronics department to see if there's anything there that oh my God, I missed this.
Yeah, I mean, that price point is very attractive. You got to admit. I mean, what's a PlayStation 5 cost if you can even find one? $500? $449 or something like that?
They're more expensive than the Oculus Quest, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with this quote because the more I think about the physical side of things, people getting vertigo, I probably get vertigo from this. And I was just speaking to somebody who gets migraines. Like, I bet you could get bad headaches doing this. I just can't see this being something that takes off and people are like, this is the real world now.
That's sort of the issue that I think Facebook's crappy little experiment will solve. It's so unrealistic that I don't think it's going to trick people's brains into causing the vertigo sensation. I don't know that, never having played one of these garbage games that looks like shovelware, because they are shovelware. I looked when we mentioned the Valve Index thing. I was like, I'm curious. Do they have any games on there that I'd actually be interested in? Not for $1,000, no.
Oculus has Resident Evil 4.
I saw that, and that's their main selling point. That's a big headliner.
But there's nothing else here that I recognize. I'm looking at what's considered their most popular.
And Resident Evil 4 is a game from, 2003?
It's actually at the bottom of the list. It's the last thing on the list of most popular games. The YouTube VR, Beat Saber. Beat Saber looks like fun, I'll admit that.
Oh, yeah, I've heard people say that that's fun. It's like you're smashing things.
They're fun, but would you buy a VR headset to play it?
No.
Or would you just play it at a friend's house because they had it?
Yeah, for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That's my issue with so many of these VR games is that it's a $50 game or whatever, and it's only going to entertain you for 10, 15 minutes. After that, it's a cool thing to show your buddies.
That's it. Mm. It's a tech demo. A lot of these things, that's kind of how I felt about it when I tried out the Oculus. This was at Derek J's, one of their parties they threw. They had this thing in the corner and people were playing it. And, you know, for that purpose, it was a cool thing, right? Like, you had this thing at a party. For people who've never tried VR, they can try it for 10 minutes or whatever, and then they go back to hanging out with people. That way, it's not totally antisocial. You know, you can
like
watch.
Everybody has their own virtual headset.
And you can watch the person. They had it on a monitor as well, so you could actually see what they were seeing.
That's funny.
It's just not in 3D while they're... Right. So you can watch them do the thing they were doing, and at the same time, you watch them awkwardly, like, reach around and look silly. So that's kind of a fun thing for a party to do. But it just did feel like, okay, this is a cool tech demo. This is them showing off what they can do, and some of it was pretty neat. It wasn't like... But like you said, it wasn't something that was going to hold your attention for hours at a time... At least at the point
that
I tried
it. Be worth $1,000 at the minimum.
Yeah, and at that time it was not a self-contained unit. Now, Oculus has come out with a self-contained unit, which is the one you're talking about, the $299 one, where you don't need to have a PC to plug that into. Now,
you don't even need a PC for that one?
It's a self-contained unit, which the downside is going to be there's only going to be so many games it can handle, right? Because you don't have a ballsy PC. You're not going to be playing the top-of-the-line releases. You're going to be playing old tech or lower resolution kind of gaming. But it does give you the ability to experience that VR experience for less than the cost of a PlayStation 4. And,
But it's owned by Facebook.
That's the real downside to it. That's the number one reason why, beyond the fact that I don't spend time playing video games these days, that's the reason why I wouldn't get it. If I was looking to get a VR headset, I wouldn't get it because you have to have a Facebook account.
You do, and as I understand it, if you get suspended or banned,
say bye-bye.
Yeah, you lose access to your Oculus Quest, and that to me sounds like a bad idea.
And if you lose access to that, then you lose access to all the games you paid for. These aren't free games. You know, you're paying, I guess a few of them are demos, so they're free, but, $25 for Super Hot VR, $40 for Resident Evil. I mean, you're going to be paying for these things.
I can't imagine paying $40 for Resident Evil 4 at this point. That's almost disgusting.
Yeah. And but how much is Facebook making on that? Half?
I have no idea. But
think about this. Is that an old game?
I guess a few years. But this is a
decades at least.
This is a way for Facebook to monetize their audience in a way that they've never done. Right? Facebook's quote unquote free, and that's because you're the product. They sell you to their advertisers, and they make money off of advertisers. But now they've got an actual product. They've got hardware they can sell you. Now, of course, in video games, in the world of video games, hardware is usually sold at a very bare minimum profit, if any profit at all. They just want to get the hardware into your home so you start using it and get hooked on it and start buying the software, which is where they really make their money.
Yeah,
so
one of the big game consoles that released recently, I don't know if it was this generation or last generation, but they sold it at a loss. That way,
to get people in the door.
Yeah, that way they could make the money off the software that they were selling for it. I wish I could remember which company that was.
So Facebook is basically attempting to become a video game company here.
Which is fine, but they're not calling themselves a video game company.
And they're trying, and that's because they're trying to increase the market and say, we're more. We're more than a video game. You can have a meeting. You know, like, come on in. Bring all the companies. They would love to have corporations buy a bunch of Facebook Oculuses, give them to their employees and say, you don't have to come into the office. We're going to be having our meeting on Facebook or on Meta today. So you can see where they're coming from and where they see that the money is here. There's a lot of potential money, and there are millions of people who are buying these
things. Why would that be easier than a Zoom meeting or a Jitsi meeting? Well, I don't see how it would possibly be better than that.
I can see how it would. And I'm not an advocate, necessarily. I think online meetings suck in general. But if you're going to have one, I could see the benefit of doing a virtual room of people instead of a clunky mess of a video conference. I mean, anyone who's been on these video conferencing systems knows it's always a nightmare.
Why do you think that the virtual reality conference room wouldn't end up clunky and crappy
because you're not seeing your coworker's cat?
I'm just going, from
oh
a technical.
Oh my God, Kitty!
I'm talking about from a technical aspect. How many conferences have you been in where it's like, can you hear me? Can you hear? Or there's, yeah. their mic's not working at all.
Why wouldn't it be like that in VR? Somebody's going to be not
Here's
doing
why.
Their
because
thing
it's
right.
self-contained.
Here's why: because they would all be using working software. The headsets just it's either going to get you. You're either going to be in it and it's going to be working, or you're not going to be in it and you're not. You know, your headset's broken or something like that, right? So for the people that are in that conference, there should be very few technical issues with like an audio feed from that person's microphone.
That's true, but yeah. I don't think it's going to sell. I don't think you're going to get companies to go, okay, yes, we're going to buy, you know, 10 Oculus Quests for our employees to have meetings with when they can say, oh, no, just use Zoom.
Get on Zoom, yeah. Yeah.
It's not like horrible Zoom.
And I think Facebook or Meta, whatever you want to call them, would be doing a lot better if they were actually marketing this to gamers because they may want
oh, they
to.
Are.
You
mean the Metaverse. They're yes. marketing the Quest, the Oculus to gamers. Yes.
But they're the ones who are going to be interested in this Meta idea, but they can't market it to gamers because gamers Sucks. Are going to see this crap and go, yeah, that's terrible. 603-283-6160. There's more coming up. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, and I want to say thank you to Jared Hofker, who is tonight's amplifier. This means that Jared is a member of the AMPS program. You can find that at AMPS, that's AMPS, .freetalklive.com. If you like the show and you want to show your support, the AMPS program is the best way to do it. It does come with a number of cool little perks, but really the reason to join is because you like the show, you value the show, and you want to show your support, you want to help out. The AMPS program is the best way to do that. Jared is a gold level amplifier, which means that Jared is giving $10 per month to the AMPS program. Of course, it doesn't take that much. All it takes to get you in is $5 per month. That gets you in, and then you get the podcast, the amplifier only podcast, and some other cool stuff. So you may want to check it out. That's amps.freetalklive.com. We have Alu Axelman calling from here in New Hampshire. Alu, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
So
hey.
Yesterday was the hearing for House Bill 1189, sponsored by Julia Sodi and Warden and Yakubovich, and it was essentially encouraging and clarifying the program, and it was encouraging the state government and municipalities to raise revenue voluntarily like the rest of us do without violence, without theft. Mm. So mm-hmm. very interesting. They had the hearing in Ways and Means, the tax committee, yesterday, and as it just happened, Julia Sodi, the prime sponsor, was sick, so he didn't come, and Warden and Yakubovich were not there. So I essentially presented the bill to the committee, and I ended up speaking for like 30 minutes, and everyone wow. on the committee asked me a few questions. So they all went back and forth questioning me for like 30 minutes. So it was awesome. I was having a blast. It's the longest I've ever spoken on the stand in a committee ever.
Now, this bill would allow municipalities in New Hampshire or any state agency to accept voluntarily contributed funds, correct? Create a fund to do that specifically.
Exactly. So the bill essentially says that the state government and municipalities may accept donations and also may acknowledge that donation with some sort of acknowledgement, meaning essentially advertising, meaning if a person wants to donate some money to their local fire department or to the state government for their New Hampshire hospital, and they ask them to give them in exchange something to incentivize them to give the money, like a transaction by putting a big logo or something on the side of the building or vehicle or a bus stop or something, which we already have, then, you know, that would incentivize them. So very interesting. A lot of the committee members had a lot of concerns. Even the good ones, Burstein is libertarian, but the rest of them had a lot of concerns, even the ones rated high on NHLA. And the issues that they had were mostly they were worried about, you know, cronyism and private companies giving money to the government, which I explained. I thought I answered that question pretty well. I said, private companies already give money via lobbying and donations and other stuff and under the table and legal and semi-legal and illegal corruption. This is literally the most open, transparent private companies giving money to the government, and it offsets taxation. So number one, it's transparent and open. So Obviously, if Google sponsors the state government's police, you will know because it will say Google on the side of their cars.
But wait. I thought there was only the option for it to offset taxation, meaning that the municipality could choose to offset.
Yeah, I mean, the way the bill is written, the bill says that the money can be used to offset taxation or to fund the new project, which I think I'm okay with if I understand it. But it also says it could be used for other purposes, which I don't like. If I would have written the bill, I probably would have just kept it to just offset taxation. Which I think keeps it simple. So they were wondering about that, and a few other conservatives on the committee said, well, what if Planned Parenthood wants to sponsor the ambulances in my town? I wouldn't like that. And what if someone really hates it and sues, and who will pay for the lawsuit? And I'm like, whoa, this is...
That's silly, is what it is. I mean, he would be unhappy that his ambulance services were being paid for by someone else voluntarily because he didn't like the company that... paid for it?
Yeah, he seemed to be very concerned that there would be a lawsuit, and he asked who would pay, and he said, what if someone sues because he doesn't like one of the businesses that sponsors something, or what if someone sues because their company didn't get the contract for the ad, and another company did? And I said, well, whoever outbids the most, like that's how an auction or bidding works,
you don't get to be sad just because you lost the bidding war. You don't get to sue someone.
I don't think they would sue because we would have clear rules. Every town could set up their own rules. Some might accept the highest bidder, some might accept the first bidder. I don't know. And that's up to the town manager or the governor. But even more so, right now, companies, towns and the state contracts with companies, and one company wins the contract and the others lose. Do they all sue? I don't know.
Maybe given that Planned Parenthood has a habit of receiving money from the state, I highly doubt they're going to all of a sudden reverse their business model and start giving money to the state. So it seems like an unlikely scenario to begin with. But if this bill were to actually require that these monies offset the taxpayer dollars, then I could really get behind it. As of now, I'm just kind of like lukewarm towards it, like, because I don't really want to see the government get more money than they already get. I don't think that's a good thing.
Maybe we should all email and try to ask them to amend it.
Actually a good question is, like, when can the amendments come in? Do you know, Alu, as far as
so it's right now. So I think it's in the committee, and that's why after the hearing, a few other reps came out to the hall to speak to me, and they said that, you know, if they passed it, if they were going to support it, they would want to make a few amendments, which I'm fine with. So, yeah, I think generally amendments happen in the committee between the initial hearing and the exec session. So they're already talking about it, and I spoke to Julius, the prime sponsor, and said to get in touch with them, and Alan Burstein, who's on Ways and Means, wants to help with some good amendments. And I think one of the things I said to Julius when I spoke to him today was, let's maybe just do an amendment to just offset taxation and keep it simple. And that's the thing. When I spoke to Doucette and Ullery, the two Republicans on the committee who came out to the hallway to whip my butt about this stuff and like tell me all the issues with it, I said, listen, if you don't like seeing Planned Parenthood on an ambulance, I get it. I might not love it either, but I would be overall happy to see my taxes go down.
If taxes were going down, I'd be like, all right, come on in. I don't care. Amazon, Facebook, corporatize the whole thing, whatever, as long as I don't have to pay for it. I'd be totally about that. That'd be great.
Exactly. In the committee, one of the reps, one of his questions to me was, wouldn't you be afraid that this would corporatize and commercialize all of our state government? And I'm like, yes, that's the point.
Who cares?
That's the point. Fund it voluntarily. Yeah. And again, like I kept saying to him, like, Even I think when Doucette was questioning me, he said, what if there's harm done to someone in the community and they sue? Who will pay for the exposure to that? And I'm like, with all due respect, I don't know how seeing a logo of a company will physically harm
someone. That's what insurance is for. That's why police departments insure their officers.
People can't sue for their feelings.
If they put on some stupid logo that's cheap and it falls off and lands on someone's windshield and calls a wreck, then the company that paid for that cheap logo should be sued for it.
That would be a ridiculous scenario.
I mean, it is, but I can't imagine how else one of these logos could actually do any harm to people.
Well, he was saying a conservative will be very offended by seeing Planned Parenthood's logo, which I understand, but it won't physically hurt them.
Like, did you ask him to stop being a snowflake?
Yeah, I was going to say, these easily offended conservatives, man. Jeez.
Well, I didn't quite say that, but I did use the emotional argument. I said, what will hurt is my grandmother on a fixed income of a few $100 a month, when her taxes go up every year and she has to choose between paying her property taxes or her food for groceries or something, like if she could save a few $100 a month, that will actually help her and not hurt her because her taxes are hurting her and making her starve to death.
So I like this idea. As long as it reduces the actual taxpayer burden, I think this is a great plan. If it doesn't do that, I gotta say, I'm almost against it. I mean,
I think in New Hampshire, there's a decent chance in most of the towns and cities that it would reduce the tax burden.
Just because of the right people are on the town boards and that sort of thing. But not in a city like Keene.
No, Keene would not.
In Keene or Nashua or Portsmouth, they'd be...
These people are monsters.
They'd be all about the extra revenue and
unless the bill tells them they have to reduce taxes.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, so that's the one key change. But the fact that this is even being talked about, I think, is important. And
the good news is it's already happening, right? So I passed by another bus stop in Manchester, which I assume the city of Manchester government owns, and there were ads all over the bus stop. There are, you know, ads, buses, bus stops, and police cars. So they're already doing it. So what I was going to ask Pre-Talk Live is, you guys have an advertising budget. You guys, just to prove a point that it's already happening, should buy some local ads in Keene and say, hey, Keene Fire Department, I'll give you such and such amount of dollars for a sign that says Free Talk Live, freetalklive.com, lrn.fm, a bunch of ads, and you could give money to the fire department, tell them to offset taxes with it, and everyone's happy. They're happy, you're happy, and taxpayers are a little happier too. So I think we should do this, and I might do this with Liberty Block. I might go to my fire department tomorrow and say, how much would it cost for a small plaque saying libertyblock.com on the side of your ambulances? And if it's under a few hundred bucks a month, I might go ahead and do that.
You don't want a plaque, you want to do the wrap.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you want to wrap it.
It's an interesting idea, but correct me if I'm wrong. This legislation is needed because the fire department can't simply accept your money and put your plaque up right now.
I think
they
can.
They can.
I believe they can. The Manchester police, I've seen it. I've seen plaques on the side of Manchester police vehicles saying sponsored by St. Mary's Credit Union.
Yeah, and I've seen city council meetings where in Keene they will say such and such a person has died and their estate is leaving the city of Keene $100,000, which is insane. But this does happen from time to time. Like the entire Robin Hood Park here in Keene was donated after somebody died from their estate. And shall we accept this? Then they have to vote to accept it, and that's it. So I'm not really sure what this does differently besides basically encourages this or authorizes it, makes it clear. But Alu, thanks for calling about it, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I would rather taxes be voluntary. That way I can volunteer to not give the government money.
I love that.
Them not hold, you know, me prisoner for that. Yeah. You can join us. We're out of time in the meantime on our chat server at chat.freetalklive.com.